चक्र गदा हस्ते महालक्ष्मी नमोस्तुते। नमस्ते गरुडारूढे कोलासुर भयंकरे सर्व पाप हरे देवी महालक्ष्मी नमोस्तुते। सर्वज्ञे सर्ववरदे सर्वदुष्ट भयंकरी सर्वदुःख हरे देवी महालक्ष्मी नमोस्तुते। सिद्धि बुद्धि प्रदे देवी भुक्ति मुक्ति प्रदायिनी मंत्रमूर्ते सदा देवी महालक्ष्मी नमोस्तुते। आद्यंतरहिते देवी आद्यशक्ति महेश्वरी योगजे योग संभूते महालक्ष्मी नमोस्तुते। स्थूल सूक्ष्म महारुद्रे महाशक्ते महोदरे महापापहरे पद्मासनस्थिते देवी परब्रह्म स्वरूपिणी परमेशि जगन्मातर महालक्ष्मी नमोस्तुते। श्वेतांबरधरे देवी स्नानालंकार भूषिते जगत्पिते जगन्मातर महालक्ष्मी नमोस्तुते। महालक्ष्म्यष्टकस्तोत्रं यः पठेत् भक्तिमान् नरः सर्वसिद्धिम् अवाप्नोति राज्यं प्राप्नोति सर्वदा। एककालं पठे नित्यं महापापविनाशनं द्विकालं यः पठे नित्यं धान्य समन्वितः। त्रिकालं यः पठे नित्यं महाशत्रु विनाशनम् महालक्ष्मी भवे नित्यं प्रसन्ना वरदा शुभा। इति इन्द्रकृत महालक्ष्म्यष्टकस्तवः सम्पूर्णः।
Which is, I think, very appropriate. And it is my huge honor to welcome you to this fifth class in our series on Goddess. It's been an extremely dramatic week, actually a pretty dramatic couple of weeks, both in on the macro level, as I think many of us know and have been dealing with in our personal lives, as well as in the so-called external world. And we're very, very, very much at a moment when Kali is dancing. This has been true, I have to say, during much of my life, certainly, and probably much of your lives. I think we've all been quite moved by the different kinds of sharing that have been being posted on the listserv, every kind of experience of Kali, from, you know, deep openings to her beauty, to fear, to a sense of everything being thrown upside down. So, and one of the, you know, it's of course lovely to be transitioning into Lakshmi, who is the kind of quintessence of the light, beautiful goddess. And at the same time, I do hope that for you, as for me, the encounter with Kali has been profound, as profound as it was for Rob and for others who have shared. So I want to read you a passage about Kali from a book that I'm going to send you the title of. It's by a friend of mine named Aditi Devi, and it's mostly a translation of a text called The 100 Names of Adya Kali. And in the introduction, she talks a little bit about her own relationship with Kali, which I won't go into in great detail. But she says, we tend to live in a world that valorizes the light over the dark in so many ways. One of the common misunderstandings found in the spiritual teachings available to us in the West these days is that spiritual development means ascending, moving towards the light and being light. We move upward and out as a form of spiritual development. Another way to explore our spiritual development is as a process of moving into the dark. And she then goes on to say, aligning with the dark as a source of wisdom is a vital part of the path of the yogini and yogi. It's essential to who we are in these bodies. Making friends with the dark, our dark, her dark, is part of the path of embodiment. So, and of course this is true in many levels, because for most of us the inside of our physical body is dark. And to actually bring our attention into the body is a very demanding process. The inside of the earth is dark. And, of course, many, many aspects of our emotional life feel dark, feel like they're in shadow. So I'm grateful to those of you who really let yourself enter some aspect of your own dark this week, as I certainly did, and for the contemplations, the dreams, the metaphors, the poems, the paintings that so many of you offered as you confronted anger, grief, emotional intensity inside and through other people, and of course, against the background of world events, which are so Kali-esque in so many ways. So I also want to take note of something that, again, I think many of us have been feeling this week, which is that the more open we are as practitioners, the more, let's say, the more possible it is to actually feel the pain and anger that's present with each other and in the wider field. And I feel that if we understand our own sensitivity and our own increasingly acute awareness of what suffering feels like us, you know, not only our own, but the suffering that we bear witness to, it does give us and has given us, and I know that quite a few of you have taken advantage of that, of this, the opportunity to move into the energy within fear or anger. It's the particular grace of Kali that this very intensity that activates the buried issues or the not-so-buried issues actually presents us with a doorway that we can dive through into the felt sense of the emotion and actually begin to come through to the place where, as several of you shared, we realize that Kali's fierce love is ecstatic. So, and I also want to add that, I think we said it last week also, that when we're working with emotions, we can do it in a Bhuvaneshwari fashion by creating space around emotional intensity and allowing the edges of the difficult energies or the intense energies to dissolve. And we can also work with it through mantra, through the Om Kali Ma mantra or another mantra, and through identifying with the witness, with the Shiva aspect of our own awareness, the part of us that's still and present to experience. So as we continue to dance back and forth between the light and the dark, between the dark and the light, actually this week and next week, we are practicing with goddesses of light and beauty. In this process, and this is something I've noticed throughout the goddess classes that I've taught and been privileged to be part of with many of you guys over the years, is that studying goddess is all about integrating, you know, integrating depth and surface, integrating light and dark, integrating personal and formless. So when we move into Lakshmi practice, as we will in just a minute, we really are moving towards the goddess who is the goddess of positive energy. She's the goddess of transforming negative thoughts to positive thoughts. She's the goddess of light, the goddess of auspiciousness, of beauty, of generosity. So I just want to start. We've been listening to the Ashtalakshmi Stotram, which is 8 verses on Mahalakshmi, sung by a wonderful singer named Uma Mohan. It's from her her album Sacred Song, Sacred Chants to Lakshmi. And I will send it to you. It's available on iTunes. And she has recordings of a whole series of Sanskrit chants to Lakshmi, to Shakti, to Ganesha, to Rudra, to Shiva. She's, you know, she has a beautiful selection of chants that you can also dance to, at least in my experience. So I want to begin with chanting a Lakshmi, a Lakshmi Gayatri, which you received on your sheets of paper. It was printed, my fault, with a couple of the mantras backwards, but you have the true version. And this Gayatri, the Gayatri mantras are, there are different Gayatri mantras for every deity. This Gayatri is one that addresses Mahalakshmi as the source of all Shaktis. So I'm going to read you the translation first. May we have knowledge of Mahalakshmi. May our intellects be illumined by Sarva Shakti, by she who is the source of all powers, she who is all Shaktis. May we meditate on Goddess. So this is a Gayatri mantra that equates Mahalakshmi with the great goddess. Just as in our conversation about Kali, we recognized Kali both as a specific goddess who has the job of liberating us from thoughts, of dissolving obstructions, and who also is the goddess of dissolution in general. But we also looked at how Kali is the great goddess. She is creation, sustenance, and dissolution, all wrapped into one, as well as being the source of everything. Lakshmi is another name for this Sarva Shakti, for the primordial power that creates, sustains, and destroys. Her unique specific function in the cosmos is as the sustainer, but she's also the holder of all. And though Lakshmi is basically a gentle goddess, she can also be fierce, though in a different way than Kali. So I'll chant, and you can chant along with me. Om Mahalakshmiye Vidmahe Sarva Shaktiye Dhimahi Tano Devi Prachodayat. Om Mahalakshmiye Vidmahe Sarva Shaktiye Dhimahi Tano Devi Prachodayat. Om Mahalakshmiye Vidmahe Sarva Shaktiye Dhimahi Tano Devi Prachodayat. And we can bring ourselves into a comfortable, upright posture. And as we enter into this class, let's really feel that we enter into our bodies, that we feel how our bodies feel at this moment, how Shakti is manifesting within our bodies. So see if you can bring your attention into your feet with a sense of being present in your feet, of being very deeply connected to the energy of your feet, almost as though your sense of yourself is in your feet. This is not that easy for most of us. Most of us are used to, let's say, looking at our bodies as somehow outside us. You know, even though the texts of the tradition tell us that we identify with the body, which of course we do, it's also true that because most of us are in some way intellectually centered or mind-centered, we tend to ride the body rather than be the body. So just see if for this moment you can let yourself be your feet, be your ankles, your calves. See if you can be aware of yourself as your thighs, as the place where the buttocks meet the seat. See if you can become, be your buttocks and thighs, your pelvis. So be the support. See if you can feel what it's like to be that part of your body, the pelvic girdle, the hip joints, the thighs meeting the seats. And inhaling, feel yourself as your pelvis, your hips and thighs. Feel that this part of your body becomes heavy and grounded. And as you exhale, feel that the breath lifts you up through your spine. You are your spine, all the way up to the crown. So can you let yourself be your spine? Can you let yourself be your chest and your shoulder blades as they release onto the back? And you can begin to breathe, inhaling with the feeling that you're drawing in particles of Lakshmi Shakti in through your nostrils, flowing down your throat, feeling that these particles of Lakshmi Shakti, which I always tend to visualize as a kind of a rose gold color, but that may be, these light particles may show up very differently for you. So just feel that the light of Lakshmi is flowing in down through the nasal cavities, through your head, releasing any tightness in your cheeks, in your forehead, under your eyes. And as the golden pink energy of Lakshmi flows into your neck and shoulders, see if you can really feel into the sense of this very loving, nourishing radiance that is the light of Lakshmi, that is goddess light. She's taking the form of this golden pink light, bringing your awareness down through the chest and the belly, touching into the area of the stomach and all of those organs that you can sense in the middle abdomen and then down into the intestines and the sexual organs, down into the anus and those parts of your body that, generally speaking, you leave in the dark. And as the breath flows, the inhalation brings these rose pink particles of Lakshmi energy down through your pelvis, your thighs, your knees and calves, and into your feet. Inhaling as you allow this breath to flow in and out through the body. Listen to these words. O power beyond all powers, lover and mother of the universe. You are the life within my life, the breath within my breath. I invoke you as Mahalakshmi, the power of prosperity, beauty, and good fortune, the power of success and fertility. O Mahalakshmi, you dance within my mind. You dance in every movement of beauty in the natural world. You are the gift that is given, and you are the power to receive the gifts. You are the source of everything that makes life sweet. You are love and you are harmony. You are gold and you are grain. You are fruits and you are flowers. You are summer. You are shelter. You are worthiness. You are integrity. You are goodness. You are courage. You are the auspiciousness of the mind. May we be blessed and held in your light, even when your light takes the form of darkness. May we feel the support of your gentle and rigorous compassion. May our lives be an expression of your golden love. So just let yourself draw in the light power of Goddess Lakshmi. You may imagine her surrounding you in the form of streams of golden light, or simply as a feeling of love. With every inhalation, you draw in her light, shimmering through your nostrils into your body, flowing through your body with the exhalation and flowing all around you. And once again, we'll invoke her with the power of mantras. The mantras here, Om Shrim Hrim, Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha. Lakshmi Bhyo is a vocative form of her name. It's a name we use to address her. Om Shrim Hrim, Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha. Om, auspiciousness, manifestation. We offer salutations to Lakshmi. Om Shrim Hrim Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha. Om Shrim Hrim Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha. Five more times. Om Shrim Hrim Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha. 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 Most of us, I think, know what Lakshmi looks like. She is one of the most famous goddesses in the Hindu pantheon. And, of course, we also might know her in her form as Aphrodite, who is, I would say, really a form of Lakshmi. But in our vision of her, she's golden. Her skin is golden. She has long, lustrous, dark hair, and she's often shown rising from the ocean, kind of like the Botticelli Venus. Because Lakshmi, like Venus, is a goddess of fertility, she's associated with the ocean, which I guess we've always known is the source of life. And she's literally shimmers with radiance. This golden quality about her is really an expression of her, of the particular kind of radiance that is Lakshmi's. And she's also often shown sitting on a lotus, which is the great symbol of fertility and purity in the Eastern traditions. Sometimes if you look at her pictures, and there are a couple on the course page of the website, she has elephants on each side, and sometimes the elephants are have their trunks upraised, and they're about to shower her with water there, which is a very powerful form of practice in the Indian tradition. It's called Abhisheka, where we bathe the deity, and it stands for, that water stands for the stream of nectar that flows from the highest source and bathes us as the elephants are bathing the goddess. So she's, Lakshmi has, in most pictures, she has four hands, though there are paintings of her with as many as 10 hands. But her four-handed form, one of its meanings is that it symbolizes the four goals of life: pleasure, wealth, righteousness, and ultimate liberation, which both she and her consort Vishnu are said to embody. So Lakshmi is the Shakti of a full life in the world, a life that includes pleasure, kama is a Sanskrit word, wealth or artha, which we'll say more about, righteousness or dharma, and ultimate liberation or moksha. She is supposed to be able to give you all of those four. And normally her two upper hands hold lotus flowers, while the two lower hands shower gold coins, and sometimes one of the lower hands holds a pot, which symbolizes the nectar of immortality. And if you remember this symbol, the goddess holding a pot, holding a container, which is filled with blessing, is, you see it in the forms of Kuan Yin. You also see it in some of the Welsh or Celtic goddesses. So the goddess in this particular manifestation is actually that, you know, that one who pours out the gifts of life. And the Amrita, the nectar of immortality in esoteric tradition, is the bliss, the joy, the love that trickles into the heart as Lakshmi's gifts take root inside us. The gold coins, of course, are obvious, but they don't just symbolize money. They also symbolize every form of wealth. That is to say, the wealth of friendship, the wealth of virtue, the wealth of different kinds of success, food, of course, beauty, the ability to appreciate beauty. You know, Abhinavagupta uses the word wonder or chamatkara, which kind of describes this experience of going, oh my God, the awe-inspiring beauty of this world. She's a goddess that, you know, people go to for charisma, for leadership capacity, for sovereignty. She's a relationship goddess. She's the goddess of luxury. She's a goddess you go to for fame, to be revered, to be honored, and for artistic success. So in Sanskrit, the word for all these facets of worldly success is artha, which is usually translated as wealth, but which actually means success. Whatever form of success you are able to earn or receive is your artha. And it's not only money. It's everything to do with abundance, whether abundance of goods or abundance of the inner qualities that make us happy. So she's also, you know, in one of the verses that Uma Mohan was chanting earlier, she's also praised as the giver of both intelligence and success. Siddhi Buddhi Prade Devi Bhukti Mukti Pradayini. She's also the one who gives worldly enjoyment and liberation. So she's a Sarva Shakti. She's a goddess whom we can worship at every moment. So we can say, and I, you know, the deepest understanding that I have about Lakshmi is that she represents everything that we value about life in the world, life on the planet, including the planet itself, because, of course, she's the goddess of sustainability in every sense of the word. She's the goddess that we invoke for deep ecology, you know, for really looking at how we're holding this planet that we live on. Also what society values. So one of the interesting things about practicing with Lakshmi that we're going to look at this week, or that you're going to have a chance to look at for yourself this week, is that she's both the goddess of, let's call it, the social values, of society's values, of all the ideas of success in the world, or let's say the traditional ideas of success, including family. She's also the goddess of internal value, of what it is within us that we truly value, and of our own sense of worthiness, which is, I would say, if you had to choose a gift of Lakshmi, a gift to ask Lakshmi for, I would say that asking her for the feeling of being worthy of receiving the gifts of life would be a very, very good one to suggest to her. So let's take a breath, and our breaths during this class, as in many of our goddess classes, in our breaths, we're breathing in her light. And our intention here is to allow the power of the breath, which is, of course, the goddess's cosmic power, to enter us and infuse us with Lakshmi's subtle, scintillating, glimmering radiance as she flows in through our nostrils and through our nasal passages, through our brain and our heart and our body. So let me tell you, I think, one of my favorite Lakshmi stories, one that my guru used to tell us. There was once a man who was prime minister for a king, and it's actually a true story. His name was Vidyaranya. He later became a swami and was known as Swami Vidyaranya, and was also a great scholar of Vedanta. So he was working for the king, and he was very religious. And at one point, he just got fed up with court politics, and he decided that as a worshiper of goddess, that he would leave his job and just sit in his meditation room, meditate on Lakshmi, and ask the goddess to provide his livelihood. So that's what he did. He resigned from his position, and he began to do quite elaborate worship ceremonies in honor of Lakshmi. And if you know anything about the Indian tradition, you know that it can get very expensive to do homa, to do puja, because you can offer all sorts of valuables to the sacred fire, including gold and jewels, sacred woods, etc., etc. So as he kept performing these ceremonies, he ran out of money because the goddess was not providing him with any physical manifestations of wealth, although his spiritual state was advancing. And at one point, his wife just decided she couldn't live that way anymore. She went back to her parents. His kids had grown up. They'd gone off. And finally, he realized that he was utterly destitute, and that since he had no more wealth, he might as well take initiation as a renunciant, since he had pretty much renounced everything anyway. So he took sannyas initiation, during a ceremony which he threw everything, including his own metaphoric body, into a sacred fire. And a few days later, he was sitting in the meditation room when suddenly he heard the tinkle of anklets, which goddesses, you know, wear these little bells on their ankles. And he opened his eyes, and he saw that this radiant, shimmering woman in a sari that seemed to be made out of rainbows, was standing in front of him, and he said, "What are you doing here?" She said, "I am Lakshmi. I have come in answer to your praise, to your invocations." And he said, "Oh my God, I've worshipped you for so many years, and you never came, and now you come. I'm a Swami. I can't accept money." And she said, "Well, you know, you had a lot of karmic baggage, and it took a while for your worship to, you know, kind of wash away your stuff. So I came as soon as I could." And he said, "But I have no use for money." She said, "Well, I have to give you something. So I'll tell you what," she said, "I'll give you wisdom." And she downloaded the entire philosophical tradition of India into him, and he became the famous writer and scholar. His name, Vidyaranya, means the forest of knowledge. Now, my guru used to tell us this story, and I've always found it quite, he used to tell it to us to cheer us up when we felt like we'd been doing a lot of practice and not getting much reward. His point being that whatever practice you do will eventually bear fruit, and one of the ways it will bear fruit is by purifying you, which, of course, is part of what goes on when we invoke Kali, because she is the ultimate purifying goddess, but Lakshmi also purifies us. And as our practice, our meditation, especially our mantra practice is incredibly important for this. The layers of karma and misunderstanding are gradually removed. Kali can remove them quick. It's one of the reasons that we love her. As Aurobindo once said, revolutions that could take lifetimes with another goddess can happen in a minute through Kali. And Lakshmi's process is a bit more gradual and a bit less intense. But the fruit, I would say actually that Lakshmi purifies us through love, through joy, and, you know, through the trickle of her golden light through our being, gradually removing the darkness. Kali does it swiftly and sometimes with a feeling that we're having radical surgery performed. But the deeper teaching, I feel, of Lakshmi, you know, is that in order to, let's say, please her, in order to really fully experience what she is, we actually both have to face into the qualities that limit us, which is the point of the purification process, and we also have to solve the koans of our particular karmic circumstances. And that apparent dichotomy between letting go of everything and working out our karmas in such a way that we can actually give and receive the gifts of our life in the body. This apparent dichotomy is at the heart of Shakta practice, of goddess practice. When the Shaktas say that goddess gives bhukti and mukti, or worldly enjoyment and liberation, another word for it is bhoga, meaning enjoyment, and moksha, meaning freedom. What it's really saying is that we don't get away with choosing one or the other. Renunciation actually has to be balanced, and of course, enjoyment has to be balanced. So this is our practice this week. We're going to try and merge our spiritual path with our desire to express ourselves, to succeed, to experience personal love, family, life, friendship, wealth, in whatever way is viable at this point in our life. You know, your wealth doesn't necessarily look like somebody else's wealth, but the sign that Lakshmi is within you, the sign that you're experiencing her abundance, is that you feel abundant. And again, I think you all know this, that, you know, and you also probably know that the feeling of abundance actually can be mirrored in external life. But the real point here is that the goddess path tells us that the world itself is sacred because it's her, and therefore it's not in our best interests to try to escape either from life's challenges or from life's beauty. And in her, you know, there's another very beautiful book, which is, again, mostly translations, but which has a wonderful introduction. It's called Invoking Lakshmi, which is a series of translations of different Lakshmi hymns by Constantina Rhodes. And she describes a moment when she attended a spiritual festival. And she had a booth there, Constantina. And she saw a woman browsing a stall that sold pictures of deities. And this woman asked for a picture of Lakshmi and was shown the traditional calendar art, which shows her with gold coins dripping from her hands and piles of coins around her. And this woman said, no, I don't want the picture with all that money. I want a spiritual version of Lakshmi. It's interesting that a statue maker in South India has now created a statue of Lakshmi meditating, no gold coins. She's sitting in Padmasana in meditation. But, of course, a true Shakta, a true goddess practitioner, would say that the distinction between what is spiritual and what is worldly is a false distinction. Because, first of all, from a practical point of view, even spiritual people need some Lakshmi, which is why patrons have been so important in temples and ashrams, but also simply because the world is a place where the physical realities need to be engaged. The great Aurobindo said in his book, The Mother, that it's very important, in his section on Lakshmi, he said spiritual people need to realize that spirituality and money are not incompatible. He says that if we do this, then we leave the wealth of the world in the hands of people who have no interest in spirituality. Or we could say that we leave Lakshmi in the hands of people who use her for egoic purposes. So this is one of the reasons why in India during the Lakshmi festival of Diwali, merchants pile up their coins and their checkbooks and their financial statements and their computers and their, probably nowadays their iPads and their phones, and worship them as forms of the goddess. They wave lights to them. They make flower offerings to them. They describe and honor these physical substances that represent wealth as forms of Lakshmi. And of course, this is not an uncommon practice in the world that we call New Age spirituality. New Thought churches often will invite us to do practices where we actually tell the universe what it is that we want, and the whole point is that we don't ask the universe only for spiritual gifts. We also should not feel ashamed of asking the universe for whatever it is that we want. So the gold coins in her iconography are money, but they're also inner wealth, their integrity, their kindness, they're the qualities of character that we associate with virtue. And that said, there's increasingly in the United States and other advanced cultures, there's an understanding of the connection between money and Lakshmi. Lynn Twist, the author of The Soul of Money, that book, this famous book, The Soul of Money, actually references Lakshmi. A friend of mine who's a financial consultant says that her three main pieces of advice, financial advice, are: one, make a budget; two, donate 10% of your income to charity; and three, pray and chant to Lakshmi. So she is one of the Shaktis of what we call the good life. Lakshmi is a consort. She's the wife of Vishnu. One of her names is Vishnu Patni, which means Vishnu's wife, or Vishnu Priya, which means the delight of Vishnu. And just as Saraswati is Brahma's power to create worlds, Lakshmi is Vishnu's power to sustain worlds. And so she's, in that sense, the goddess of Dharma. And if you remember that Vishnu is the masculine deity who takes form, who takes avatar forms, who becomes forms that appear in the world, at least mythographically, like Rama and Krishna, Lakshmi also appears wherever Vishnu appears. So in the Ramayana, Lakshmi appears as Sita, who's Rama's wife. And in the stories of Krishna, she's usually said that she appears as his wife, Rukmini, Krishna has many, many relationships, so Lakshmi may be showing up in many different forms. So we're going to enter into a meditation in just a few minutes on worshipping Lakshmi by becoming Lakshmi, which is, of course, at the heart of tantric practice. But let's again return to our core meditation and just let yourself breathe in her light, inhaling the pink gold energy, letting it flow through your body. And this time we're going to add her bij mantra, her seed syllable, which is Shreem. Shreem is the mantra which invokes auspiciousness, and we'll say more about that in a few moments. But just let the breath flow in with Shreem as light, as Lakshmi's light. My favorite way to do this practice is to breathe the light in with the inhalation, and then to allow the mantra to accompany the exhalation as you sense the light being breathed through your body in the form of this exquisite energy that we call Shri. Shreem being the mantric aspect of Shri, which is, we'll talk about in a moment. So just let yourself inhale the light and exhale the light with the sound of Shreem. Feel that as you breathe the energy of Lakshmi, the light of Lakshmi, and the light of within her mantra, the light within this syllable, which is, remember, the sound form of the goddess Lakshmi, Shreem, is her direct sound form. So see if you can feel the vibration of the mantra mingling with the light and flowing through your inner body. Shri means beauty, auspiciousness, gloriousness, shimmering radiance, greatness, everything that sparkles and shines in the world. Shri was Lakshmi's original name. The first time she appears in mythology, it's in a hymn called Shri Sukta, which is a Vedic hymn. And her name, Lakshmi, which is pronounced to rhyme with luck, which is, I guess, not a coincidence. So it's not Lakshmi, it's Lakshmi. Her name, Lakshmi, actually means sign. In other words, Lakshmi's name is the, and her form are the sign of Shri. They're the embodiment of Shri. So wherever you see Lakshmi, hear her name, see her form, think of her, you're actually invoking this quality of Shri, which is the quality that, of beauty in life. And Lakshmi, by the way, is also a desire goddess. She's one of the desire goddesses, as is Lalita Tripura Sundari, whom we're going to speak about next week. Lakshmi's, the desires that are auspicious, that are Shri in Lakshmi, are also desires that involve both receiving nourishment from the world and giving nourishment to the world. So one of the assignments for this week is to contemplate the ways you nurture the world and the ways you nurture yourself. So whatever it is, whether it's preparing food or gardening or or speaking kind words or being generous to others, paying your debts, cleaning your house, which is one of my favorite ways to invoke Lakshmi, is in housekeeping. I find that that's unbelievably purifying for the mind. Also, mind practices like substituting positive thoughts for negative thoughts, that's a hyper-Lakshmi practice. Keeping a gratitude journal, committing random acts of kindness and senseless acts of beauty, making positive intentions. Doing everything you can to remember your worthiness, your fundamental goodness. And what's interesting to me, it's something I often think of, is that Oprah is actually the practices that Oprah recommends and that are a big part of New Age spirituality, if we can say that Oprah's the prosperity gospel of many American churches. Oprah is actually a really good example of Lakshmi practice, in the way she is herself, and also what she, the way she shows up. She's abundant, she's socially conscious, she's generous. She's now teaching meditation. She's become a spiritual teacher, and she's also very rich. So she's carrying Lakshmi qualities and teaching Lakshmi qualities in a very powerful way. So we could say that one way to invoke Lakshmi is to practice the Oprah qualities. They are quite skillful ways of working with creating an auspicious mind for yourself. So we're going to do a brief self-inquiry practice, a brief self-questioning practice, and we can start now and we'll go on, do it more deeply during the week. So, and we'll do it as a meditation, as an invocation of the form of Goddess. And as we say, I'm going to give you instructions for a visualization, but I want to tell you that you know, as I often say, when we do visualization practice, it's not necessarily about having a specific visual image of the goddess. It's more about using our visual sense to create a sense of the goddess as the field within which we're experiencing this moment. So find yourself in a comfortable and upright posture. It's also okay to lie down. And if you're in a car or on a walk, you can actually close your eyes on a walk if you're walking someplace safe. Definitely not in the car. But imagine yourself sitting in a beautiful place, which might be a room, and it should be, if you're imagining a room, a very beautiful and comfortable room. It might be a garden. I like to imagine myself in a garden or by a lake or by the ocean. It's a place that feels safe, comfortable, familiar. The temperature is just right. It's warm, but not too warm. There might be a slight breeze, but not too much of a breeze. And in this place, in this imaginary place, invite Goddess Lakshmi to be present. Now, she can have many forms, but I'm going to suggest that you imagine her in her classical goddess form with her beautiful golden skin and her lustrous large eyes and her long hair. Maybe she's in a silk sari, or maybe she's in a beautiful dress. And in this form, she's appearing in a two-handed form, and both of her hands, as you look at them, are open, and as you see, they're streaming golden light. They're literally rivers of golden light pouring through her fingers. And you, in this visualization, feel that you put out your hands, palms open. Placing your hands on top of Lakshmi's and feeling the streams of golden light in her hands, flowing from her hands into yours, flowing up through your arms and into your heart. Filling your chest and back. So they're literally rivers of golden light streaming from Lakshmi's hands through your body. You are, by allowing her to pour her light into you, you're becoming Lakshmi. You're letting the light of Lakshmi enter your being. However your body may feel at this moment, it's being infused with her light, with her sweetness, with her love. Now imagine that Lakshmi asks you, what do you desire? And as you hear the question, let it set forth a train of association. Just let yourself be present to the things you desire, to the feelings you desire, to the gifts you desire, whatever they are. The worldly ones, the material ones, and also the relational ones, the spiritual ones. Just let yourself speak or silently say to Lakshmi what it is in this moment you desire. What do you desire from Goddess Lakshmi right now. Now, here's another question. What is it that you desire to receive through the fulfillment of these desires? Some of you may have gone cut right to the chase here, but there's usually more. So what is it that you desire by fulfilling these desires? Will you receive that will be the deepest fulfillment of your desires? Just ask the question and don't try to make the answer conform to any of your ideas. Just let yourself notice what arises. Now imagine that the fulfillment of your desires, or perhaps the different fulfillments of your desires from the most immediate to the deepest, have been condensed into a golden ball, a ball of golden light. And imagine yourself taking that ball of light in your hands. The ball of light that contains your entire desire life, what you really want, maybe even what you took this birth to fulfill. Big desires. Imagine yourself handing this ball to the goddess. Imagine her taking it. Imagine her holding it in her hands. Infusing it with her blessing. And then feel that she gives it back to you. She places the golden ball of light into your hands. And as you receive it, that ball dissolves into your hands and begins to flow through your body. And with your next inhalation, feel as though the form or the sense of Lakshmi's presence or the thought of Lakshmi becomes a stream of golden light and begins to flow with the inhalation into your heart. So that with every breath, you're actually taking in the goddess. You're taking her in through your nostrils. You're taking her in through the pores. You're taking her in through the front of your body. You're allowing Lakshmi's light, Lakshmi's golden radiance, to infuse your entire body. Lakshmi is within your body as the essence of auspiciousness, of gloriousness, of universal beauty. And with your eyes open or closed, imagine yourself looking at the world. Perhaps the world you see in front of you in the room you're in, or perhaps an imaginary world, or perhaps a part of the world that you ordinarily feel sad about or angry about, or simply your sense of the planet herself. See if you can feel Lakshmi's gaze as your gaze. Feel her looking through your eyes at the room, at the landscape you see, at the part of the world that you might imagine. Look at your own body. Look down at your own body, whether with your eyes open or closed, and recognize that when she looks at you and when she looks around, she sees it with eyes infused with her own beauty. Have the feeling that it is possible to take Lakshmi's vision into yourself and see the world as Lakshmi, as the expression of Lakshmi, but also through the eyes of Lakshmi. So I'd like to invite those of you who would like to say something about what might have happened for you during that meditation. This is not a time for questions. We will be having questions a little bit later. But just a moment in which someone who would like to share an experience of this practice of taking Lakshmi into the body to speak. And if you'd like to do that, if you have something you'd like to share, you can press 2, and Deb, which will raise your hand, and Deb will recognize and unmute you. Deb, is that correct? Those are the right instructions.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. Star 2.
Star 2. Anyone who'd like to share?
Okay, we've got someone in Oregon. All right. You raised your hand. Speak up.
Hi, Sally. It's Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi. It's such a gift to have Goddess Lakshmi, Lakshmi. I've been so sad this week. I don't know if it's the Kali thing or this book I'm writing and this just intense feeling of failure in the midst of what looks like a lot of success. And just now when I was doing this meditation with you, I just was weeping for relief of just remembering how she has been living in me all this time and how much beauty surrounds my life, and just kind of a total reset.
Beautiful.
A total reset.
Oh, so gorgeous.
Yeah, so grateful, you know, and just wanting to be a tool for her.
As you are.
Use this life, you know. It's crazy, like, how dark it can get, you know. You can't even see the kids, you know. And they're just everywhere,
I know.
You know. So anyway, that was really very dear. I'm very, very grateful. Thank you.
Well, I hope you keep remembering this and doing this, because yes, there is a lot of darkness and suffering, and yet we can, when we bring Lakshmi into our body and through our eyes, then you know, then we can see it all in a way that actually, as you say, allows us to be a tool of blessing. It's very beautiful, Wendy. Thank you.
Yeah. It's amazing how quickly it can turn around, too. Like, just I live feeling for a different energy. So, I don't know. I wish Kali would talk to Lakshmi more, because...
No.
I know they're the same, you know, but...
the emotional sense of them is very different. And the thing that I love in what you just said, and is one of the reasons I love goddess practice so much, is that all of these energies are present in the field. We can't always find them. But very often, if you just make up your mind, okay, I'm going to invoke Lakshmi now, that, you know, she'll show up, she'll infuse you, and then even if what's going on does not feel good on its surface, she can give you a way to hold it inside her love, inside her light.
Well, I was also so grateful when you were just saying about, like, how she's courage, you know, and it just occurred to me when you were, like, reading that long list about just how much courage it takes to receive, you know,
totally.
Like, to actually take it in, and I had never thought of her in that way, but that also was just a really great opening, so anyway, thank you.
Thank you, sweetie. Is there someone else who'd like to speak to this practice, or speak of this practice?
Doesn't look like it, Sally.
Okay, so we'll move on to Lakshmi's shadow.
Okay. Oops, I just had somebody. Okay, so I've got someone in North Carolina.
Okay, and someone in New Hampshire. Let's start with New Hampshire, since it's alphabetically first.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. I think it's Sue.
Hi, it's Susan. I'm actually in Maine because I moved, but have my New Hampshire number. I was lying down and closing my eyes. And then when we came out of the meditation and I opened my eyes, I was looking out the window and I just saw all the fireflies, and it was so beautiful.
Oh God, you guys have fireflies on the East Coast. It's one of the coolest things about East Coast summer. That's so beautiful. Thank you. Yes, thousands of little points of Lakshmi light. Thank you. Thank you, Susan. And in Arden, North Carolina, is that Gail?
It is.
Hi.
I just wanted to share that it felt so good to feel the ball of gold light come in and fill me.
Mm.
And then to have, and then when you talked about the world, and it felt like I could see, like it started with the Middle East and just like her coming into me and spreading that light throughout the Middle East. And then it just went to all the different places around the world, and just
yeah.
like she was really big, and we could just step into these different places that are hurting and offer them all of that light and that love. And it's just such a beautiful practice to do that, and I really thank you for it. So.
It is. It's such a beautiful practice. And I want to say one more thing about Lakshmi practice. And this is another side of this practice, which I also want to offer you guys. You know, one of the qualities of Goddess, and this has been my experience over the years, and I think it's true of many of you, that when we make a connection with a goddess like Lakshmi, she's one of those goddesses who sort of hovers around us. And even though obviously mostly we don't see her, and we often don't feel her because we're not paying attention, but what this practice can do is start to bring your attention to the fact that actually part of what we do when we do deliberate spiritual practice is we give her the opportunity to embody, to come into the world through us, as Wendy was saying. And this is not a fantasy. This is really true. So if you're sending, you know, if you're invoking Lakshmi and taking on her light into your body in this way and then offering it to the world, this is actually one of the ways that she gives blessing to the world. And another thing that I've discovered is that if you can imagine that, and we've done this before in the Bhuvaneshwari part of the class, you know, the Bhuvaneshwari week, but if you can imagine the goddess around you, and imagine that this light, this sense of blessing, this sense of her lightness and love and auspiciousness is actually worshiping you. In other words, the goddess is worshiping you. She doesn't ask us to honor her in a way that she's not prepared to honor us. So this whole relationship with the goddess of auspiciousness, it's a relationship of constant giving and receiving. She gives, we open and receive. We give, she receives. And that reciprocal relationship is actually the play of Goddess Lakshmi as us and as the world. So, it's very, very profound to take her blessing in and let it flow out. You know, I think one of the things we know, and one of the classic, brilliant, important Lakshmi teachings is that what we take in needs also to flow out. I mean, she is a goddess of flow. But at the same time, so we don't want to hoard the gold of Lakshmi's gifts, but we also don't want to wall them off. We want to give them and we want to receive them. And, you know, one of the things that we always speak about when we talk about the goddess is the fact that the goddesses have liberating forms, liberated forms, and they have binding forms. So they have, let's call it, light forms and shadow forms, being the part of reality that we want to keep out of our gaze. Though in Lakshmi's case, her shadow aspects are extremely apparent to us. The shadow of Lakshmi runs rampant through modern late capitalist society. And, you know, as this, as as the shadow of Lakshmi's inauspicious sister. You know, Lakshmi has a sister who's called a Lakshmi, meaning absence of Lakshmi. And my teacher, Guru Mai, always used to say, never say, I'm going to get a Lakshmi statue, because when you say a Lakshmi, you're invoking non-Lakshmi, so, which is an interesting play on the power of language. But so shadow Lakshmi, you know, is all the corruption, the greed, the excess, the consumerism that, you know, just runs through our system. It's the inequality. It's the way in which developers are covering so many of the beautiful places on the earth with you know, natural gas extraction mines or luxury houses. The fact that our obsession with fame has now reached the point where so many people believe that the great expression of individuality is the number of your likes on Facebook. And we could go on and on about this, which we won't, because we're invoking the auspiciousness of Lakshmi. But it's also very important for us to look at the voices inside us that are the shadow voices of Lakshmi. You know, just as inappropriate renunciation, that is the refusal to nourish ourselves, is a symbol of our falling prey to the Alakshmi side of things. In the same way, overdoing it is an expression of the Lakshmi shadow. So we're always walking this very bright line, you know, in which we cultivate the feeling of abundance, the feeling of having enough, of giving enough, and yet we stay on that line of non-excess. Because when we try to bend Lakshmi's grace to the needs of the ego, things get bent and things go awry. And part of one of the things that the texts say about the goddess Lakshmi is that she's fickle. she will tend to tiptoe away if she doesn't like the way you're holding her gifts. And this is an interesting contemplation, like what does it mean to disrespect Lakshmi's gifts? One way, obviously, is waste, and we're living in a situation in which, you know, we could say from one point of view that human beings have for centuries, but especially in the last few hundred years, been using up the Lakshmi of the planet, not respecting her gifts, not sustaining her, and that we are reaping the consequences and will continue to reap the consequences. Though I do believe that the more we're able to feel our way into incarnating Lakshmi, embodying Lakshmi, the more our actions can be sustaining in the way that will hold her. So it's very important to notice the shadow Lakshmi in us, which has different forms, you know, from the feeling of being unworthy and not deserving success or love, which, you know, tends to be the affliction that spiritual seekers fall into, as opposed to the opposite affliction, which is, you know, the give me more, more, more affliction. This is, most spiritual people don't have that problem. Most spiritual people have the opposite problem. But disrespecting Lakshmi's gifts is also feeling unworthy of meeting them. And another, you know, a lot of Lakshmi practices are very mundane. You know, they are things like keeping your house clean. There's a story about an old couple who had worshipped Lakshmi for years, and she wanted to give them a boon, but because their house was very dirty, she couldn't find a place to put
to give her boon except their stove, which was very clean, and so she turned their stove to gold, which is a, you know, kind of an intense story, but it's actually, I think, an indication of how even when we have very little, that we can respect what we have. Lakshmi likes that. But I think more important in terms of respecting Lakshmi is to let her shift your vision, to let her, to let yourself incarnate her in whatever way is appropriate for you. And, of course, this is particularly a big deal for women because Lakshmi is one of those goddesses that kind of incarnates the traditional, traditionally feminine. Some of us are a little bit shy of her for that reason if we're not, if we don't see ourselves as traditionally feminine. But there are two types of women who are considered to, in the tradition, to particularly embody Lakshmi. One is the queen, and I want to say a little bit more about the relationship of queens to this particular goddess. The other is the mother, the wife and mother, the person who makes the home beautiful, and we don't have to be a wife and mother or even a woman to fulfill that function of Lakshmi. We don't even have to be a queen to fulfill her function, as many of you know. But I want to say something about the significance of the queen, you know, as a representation of Lakshmi. It's more a matter of cultural or anthropological interest in certain respects, but I find it very interesting. And I was recently reading a book about goddess worship in Nepal, which is a place that until very recently, it still goes on, but there's been a big political shift in Nepal. But until quite recently, for I guess thousands of years, the Kathmandu Valley in Nepal was considered the embodiment of goddess, which is true, you know, in many places in India. India is a land in which the goddess is said to live in, you know, in the earth itself, in the land itself, and there in Kathmandu in Nepal, there are three forms that the goddess takes, one of whom is the public form, in which she's said to be the land itself, the mandala of Nepal itself. Nepal is called Nepal mandala. You know, a mandala being a form which incarnates divinity. You know, the earth is actually a mandala. There is also a form of the goddess who was worshipped by the priests as Tripura Sundari, as a form of the goddess Lalita, whom we'll talk about next week. The public form of the goddess is called Taleju. And then there is a form of the goddess who was worshipped specifically and secretly by the royal family, and she was called Siddhi Lakshmi. The Talalu form of the goddess was identified with Durga. The Tripura Sundari form of the goddess was associated with Lalita. And Siddhi Lakshmi was the goddess who kings and queens worshipped, and that her yantra appeared on the royal symbol of Nepal. But the understanding was that the protection of the kingdom was ensured by the public rituals and dances and musical performances that the people of the Kathmandu Valley did, not only in temples but also in towns, by the priests' worship in the temples, but especially by the kings. And Nepal is a place where there is a long tradition of prepubescent girls known as Kumaris who would live and be worshipped for a certain amount of time and were considered to be the symbolic consort of the king. It wasn't that these little girls were actual consorts, but they were worshipped in a particular ceremony that the king did every year that was part of the worship of the goddess and part of the worship of Siddhi Lakshmi. So there was this tradition of the king marrying the goddess or marrying the land, which was done ritually, at least in modern times. In Europe, that ritual was apparently often done at a particular time of year with the priestesses of the temple and the ruling monarch or chief of the tribe. But what happens in that ceremony is that the masculine worshiping the feminine actually brings the auspiciousness of the goddess into the kingdom. And this relationship of this idea of woman as goddess and the king as Shiva, essentially, or Vishnu, the king as the masculine deity, means that the whole traditional kingdom then becomes a kind of altar, in which the goddess's blessings are brought into the land. It's quite a beautiful idea, and I think it's really the basis of tantric union is this ritual in which the goddess becomes incarnate in a human woman, but also in the earth itself, in the land itself. So we're going to again initiate another Lakshmi puja, another way of tuning into Lakshmi. As I think you know, Lakshmi is a goddess who, the more we invoke her with mantra and visualization and breath, the more we bring her into ourselves, the more we begin to become familiar with what it feels like to have this goddess shedding her auspiciousness through our whole being. So, during this class, we've been constructing altars. I know many of you have altars in your homes, and we constructed altars in the space of the class. So right now we're going to construct an altar to Lakshmi in our hearts. So again, find a posture that feels comfortable and upright. Feel yourself grounded through the sit bones. Feel the breath flowing down and grounding you, and then flowing up and lifting your body up through the crown. And then with your next inhalation, begin to feel that the breath flows through the nostrils or even horizontally from the air into your heart. And imagine that inside your chest, inside the area behind the breastbone, inside the spiritual heart, the Ananda Kanda, as it's called, which is a little bit, it's roughly corresponds to the thymus. It's about four finger widths below that U-shaped notch in your collarbone. So it's in the center of the body. It's a little bit higher than the physical heart, and it's in the center of the body, in the center of the chest. Now imagine that inside your heart is a cave whose walls are made of golden light. You might have the sense of the walls of your inner heart cave is made of velvet. The walls are made of soft golden light, The floor is in the shape of a lotus flower. And just notice the colors of the flower. Again, your attention is coming with the breath into the heart, and you're very gradually and deeply feeling this yourself in the cave of the heart with its golden walls, its lotus floor. And see that in the center of the lotus is a seat. Feel the breath falling into the heart with the sound, the syllable shreem. So the exhalation, as the inhalation falls into the heart, the exhalation opens up your sense of this inner room, this inner temple, this secret cave of the heart with its golden walls, the beautiful purity of the lotus as its floor, and invite the goddess to sit in the center of the lotus of your heart. Invite the goddess to take seat in your heart. She may appear as a woman or in another form or as a light or just as a feeling. Don't try to fix her. Don't to fixate her, because Lakshmi likes to move. She undulates. She changes. Your attention, your awareness is more and more deeply sunk into the cave of the heart. And as you deepen your focus and your sense of her presence, feel that she's smiling. Her face, Lakshmi's face, is always radiant and smiling. And now you make offerings to her, perhaps in the form of the mantra Shreem. Perhaps in the form of a prayer, or imagine a flower or a jewel. It's all made of light and it's all made of imagination, and you can offer anything to the goddess in the heart. You might imagine yourself pouring into her lap all the accomplishments of your life, or everything that you wish for the world. And with the sound of Shreem flowing with the breath, you let yourself enjoy the fact that the goddess Lakshmi is sitting in your heart, receiving your offerings. And how cool is that? And now on your next exhalation, as has perhaps already happened for some of you, just feel her breathing out those gifts that you have offered, multiplied a thousandfold, breathing them through your body, breathing them into the people in your life, breathing them into places in the world that you would love to see infused with her blessings. So with your inhalation, you make offerings into Lakshmi in the heart. And with your exhalation, you feel how very gently her gifts flow through you.
And imagine that the goddess simply dissolves into your heart. Whether or not the visualization dissolves, because of course you can continue to imagine your heart as a golden cave with a lotus floor and the goddess seated within it. You don't have to let that image go. Or you can really breathe with the feeling that Lakshmi is suffusing herself, that her Shri, her Shreem, her auspicious qualities are just infusing themselves through your body, so that she's there within you. So in the spirit of abundance, which is the spirit of Lakshmi, you'll be receiving a lot of practices this week. I got inspired. And that doesn't mean you have to do them all. There's a selection of Lakshmi invoking practices that you can work with this week, that you can discuss with your partner. A lot of them are about giving and receiving, which is a great topic to discuss with a partner. But there are also practices that I hope that you'll continue to do throughout your life, because if there was ever a goddess whose life work, for want of a better word, is to spread her radiance through the world, through each of us, it is Mahalakshmi. And when you feel rushed, or when you feel tired, or when you feel anxious, or when you feel depressed, or when you feel saddened or angry by what's going on in the world or in your office or in your family, or when you're frustrated with yourself, see if you can come back into the cave of the heart and just feel her presence there, smiling inside you, and starting to infuse your mind with this feeling of Lakshmi's Shri, her auspiciousness. Remember, Lakshmi is not about pushing away what is unpleasant or what makes you angry or sad. It's about infusing all of that with her radiance. So that then, you know, as Bhuvaneshwari creates a space within which we can hold our challenges, and Kali infuses our challenges with her revolutionary fervor that actually destroys limitations, Lakshmi infuses challenge with radiance, so that even in the worst times, we see that life is intrinsically filled with auspiciousness. So we have a little time, and we can have questions if anyone has one. You can again press star 2 and Deb will call on you. And the questions, of course, can be about what's happening in this week's practice, or what arose to be questioned during this evening's presentation.
I've got a couple. Selena, Laurel asked some questions earlier, so
she's
on the website. She asks, which goddess most is messenger and guide to deep body listening, embodied well-being? Who is she who naturally any vestiges of trauma and drama?
Well, I actually consider Lakshmi one of the great goddesses for actually teaching you how to embody auspiciously. So I would suggest imagining her presence, as we've been doing in this class, and imagining her light, and then letting yourself move through your own body with the sense that you're bringing her radiance into the body, and from that point of view, with this sense of Lakshmi infusing you, just ask what wants to be released, what wants to become more deeply embodied, what wisdom your body has for you, what issues your body is bringing up. And she actually is in a different way than Kali. Kali is radical purification, radical dissolution of karmas, as we have been discovering all week. Lakshmi is more about a gentle gaze that can start to disentangle the knots that you're feeling in your physicality as well as in your mind. So thank you for that question.
She's got one more here. She says you've spoken of Genlin's focusing before, and she has read the book and other things, done her best to practice this. There is something more. Would you be willing to share how you do the practice as practice? Seems to me deeply related to embodied goddess practice and related to Lakshmi. She says, thank you.
What are you referring to? Are you referring to my book or another book? Are you talking about Eugene Gendler, like focusing? Like
yes.
His?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I love his practice. This is Eugene Gendler, who is a very influential, many of you know him, psychotherapist who created the practice, or who discovered through his patients that if you can focus on the part of your body where you're feeling discomfort or trauma, or that you actually can, it's a focus allows healing in the body. And I think we've been speaking about that practice in different ways through the class. You know, that, for instance, a Kali way of doing this would be to find an area of discomfort or an area of numbness and to just be present with it and feel what part of your body it's in, what the texture of it is or the sensation is of it is. Move into the felt sense of it. And then I always feel that sometimes you can, this is his practice, you can ask the sensation to, you can question the sensation. You can ask what it has to tell you, what insight it has, which is something that's very skillful to do if you're in a psychotherapeutic situation. And sometimes it's, a good thing to do when you're alone. You can write down what comes up. But what I have noticed is that when we are working with an area of trauma or pain in the body and words come up, the words that come up are often our story about it, and they will distract us from the healing, which is actually the healing that occurs when we are present with the felt sensation. And bringing Lakshmi into it in the way we were doing today, like actually imagining Lakshmi surrounding you, imagine Lakshmi infusing her radiance into the trauma, not with the idea of getting rid of it, but really with the idea of this powerful, healing, loving energy that is Lakshmi infusing through your attention, through your focus, that area of your body which may be traumatized or bruised or have a disease process going on. Just bring her into it, and focusing on the felt sense, as Jean Gendler says, and then letting Lakshmi's light infuse it, and then see what happens. Because this is a divine process, and it is the goddess-touched power of our own awareness which does the healing as well as the embodiment. So thank you for that question. And I see a hand here.
Yeah.
530 numbered. Dove.
We have somebody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's Kali in Tahoe.
Hi, Kali. Is that Bodhi that we hear cooing in the back?
Yes, it is. we're walking around in the Alpine Meadows right now as the sun's setting, and it's shimmering Lakshmi everywhere at the moment.
Wow.
And it's interesting, I've had these shimmery questions coming and going throughout this whole call today, and I made a concerted effort to be able to stay in the line long enough to ask one. And this whole talk is, every time I listen to you talk about a different goddess, I'm like, oh my goodness, there's that level and that depth and that aspect and that inclusion. And it just, my heart is so huge right now with this shimmery smile in the cave. I feel I've been, in a nutshell, embarking upon this new business to confront my financial shadow that you and I have talked about on numerous occasions. And I'm feeling this new respect and approach toward money coming in. And it feels so shimmery and beautiful. And I feel like I didn't know Lakshmi had a goad as well, but it feels like she does. And she's dragging me into this new attitude and this new perspective and this new way of being in the world and with regard to personal sovereignty and autonomy and financial freedom. And these kind of words are part of my vocabulary all of a sudden. And
wow.
Today I've been in a masterminding miracle makers business, sacred business mentoring group. And all through it, I'm getting inspired to offer a workshop to whoever my people are on Lakshmi and working through financial shadows so I can learn through teaching and interacting with others. And it feels something that's so edgy for me and so beautiful and big and edgy in so many ways. And I want to do it. And I'm just wondering if there's, you knowing me the way you do, if there's something specific I can be mindful of or inclusive of or preparatory of in offering something like this. I mean, I'm feeling like I'm just going to create the structure and then be the channel for whatever comes through. But I wonder if you can speak to it in some way of what I might be mindful of, if there's anything specific. Does that make sense?
Well, first, I think that's a great idea. I would say it's very important to include the practicalities. And mm-hmm. what that probably means is that as you're learning it, and I'm a great believer in teaching what we need to learn. I think it is one of the good ways of learning. And with Lakshmi, there are a lot of, kind of worldly skills that just take attention, such as making a budget. And, you little cutie. So cooey. Like find a way to give people a resource for looking at their own finances, these very simple practical things that are pretty hard for a lot of us, especially as spiritual people. So just make sure that you consult with somebody who can remind you of the I's you need to dot and the T's you need to cross, as a person seeking financial freedom, so that there's a real balance in the course between the subtle spiritual values and, the practical skills so that everyone is kind of learning to balance the two, because it's when we bring them together that, the miracles happen.
And that's that integration that you spoke of earlier.
Integration, exactly. And I think it'll be great.
Okay. Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to say, we spoke about it a little bit tonight, but to just hold, of course it's a big part of New Age teaching about money, but what really helping people look at what they value, including what...
Wait, look at money value?
Well, look at money values, but also look at internal values, and look at whether there seems to be a contradiction between your heart's desire and money, which again, for the people in your, the people that are likely to study with you, that is likely to be an issue since it's not uncommon for spiritual people. Yeah. So I think that's great. and I think we'll all love to know what you're doing.
Well, stay tuned. I'm not sure yet. She hasn't totally told me.
No, of course, of course.
But no, thank you. I am just so, so grateful to you, as always. So.
Well, thank you so much for that question. When I first started studying Lakshmi with the view of speaking about her, which was a long time ago, and it was when I was living in an ashram, and you know, as you know, I'm in love with Goddess, and I'm in love with the subtle aspects of Goddess. But the person, the teacher who ran this ashram, Gurmai, who is majorly practical, one of the things that she would do when we were giving weekend workshops on Lakshmi, which we did a few times, was she would have a business person come in and talk about, you know, making business decisions. She would have financial people come in and talk about savings and budgeting. So the idea that it's not just the magic of the goddess that makes your life, your financial life work. It's also, you know, some of these financial instruments that accountants and, you know, other bankers and other practical people and housewives and, you know, et cetera, that are part of what it is to deal with the physical world. So that's also something to think about. Do you know any experts? So, and I think it's very appropriate that we ended on a practical note, because Lakshmi, along with being the great goddess of beauty and harmony and subtle light and blessing, is also the goddess of making the world work. So, does anyone have any other questions? We have time for one more.
Yeah, Sally, I've got Heather asks on the webcast. She said, you mentioned purification as part of the focus for our practice. She says she's always struggled with this idea. Since Tantra looks at all as divine, can you speak more to purification? Aren't we already perfect or pure as tantric practitioners, or do we need to purify?
Well, yes, we are already perfect and pure, and we are also blocked by the residue of our karmas, our family conditioning, our misconceptions about reality. So what purification means, and I know it's a tough word for many people, because it has all these kind of, I guess I could call them Catholic connotations, you know, it's and, you know, some of the sort of scary and off-putting aspects of traditional Orthodox Western religious culture, and I think the same thing is true in Eastern Orthodox religions as well, and certainly in Hinduism, that there are distinctions made about purity and impurity, and as you say, one of the hallmarks of Tantra is that Tantra is a path of non-rejection. So, you know, there are practices in Tantra, as I think we said last week, in which we take so-called impure substances, you know, often including, you know, kind of radically disgusting substances, and we make them part of the ritual. And this is a practice that's particularly powerful in places like India, where there's, at least traditionally, and that's still true to a large extent, in which in Orthodox communities there's a tremendous emphasis on ritual purity. It's true in the Jewish communities as well. You know, there are things that you must do and things that you can't do, people that you can eat with and people you can't eat with. It's a very kind of a rigid system, those traditional systems. So Tantra says all bets are off. There's nobody who doesn't deserve to sit in your circle. You know, there's nothing that's not included. Everything is sacred. And that's a fact of Tantra and its effect of life. It's the truth of life. So when we talk about purification, one of the things that we're talking about is our idea that some things are impure. And at the same time, because we live in the world, there are traits of character and shadow qualities within us that actually stand in the way of the radical opening and the radical love that is our nature. So when we purify ourselves, what we're purifying ourselves of actually is the way in which we get trapped by our negativities and our ideas and our social conditioning, and these do have to be dissolved. And there are, you know, at different points in our practice, and I know, you know, several of you have shared this, we get kind of overcome by old mental habits and emotional habits, and, you know, and that's very painful when that happens, you know, when you're having a really, really bad week, when all of your unworthiness, you know, your feelings of unworthiness and your guilt about this and that and your fear, when these things come up, they need to be purified. In other words, they need to be dissolved, and they need to be dissolved on a deep level. So this is what we mean by purification in Tantra, and in all tantric ritual, there's always a section of the ceremony, usually at the beginning, where you prepare the space by reciting mantras, by dispelling any negative energies that might be hanging around. And it might seem contradictory, but it's actually a little bit like, it's like cleaning your bathroom, you know, or washing your clothes. It's one of the ways that we create a field in which deep contemplation, meditation, chanting, ritual, creative work can happen is by clearing the space. So ultimately what purification means is clearing the space. And it's very important when we do that to do it not with a sense of aversion. You know, one of the things about so-called negative energies is that they're energies seeking their own heart, their own home. They're not, you know, they're not necessarily bad, but they don't belong in your space. So that's really the part of the gift of, or part of the art of purification in Tantra, and in my experience in all of life, is learning how to recognize when you're being occluded. I love that word. You know, when you're being shadowed by negativities, and we all have them. We all have our own favorites. You know, for some of us it's anxiety, for some of us it's depression, for some of us it's, you know, beliefs that relating to ourselves or our family or other people. So all of these need to be set aside or dissolved in order for our consciousness to both embody and ascend. And since you asked, and I'm pretty sure this is in the homework, but one of my favorite purificatory practices is to imagine those elephants that stand on each side of Lakshmi. Imagine those elephants kind of showering me with healing light, you know, with like the waters of Lakshmi's blessing just passing through my body from head to foot. And it's not just washing my body with light. And this will help dispel the, you know, the stuff that clings to us just from the course of life, from all the painful thoughts or memories that we may have, from the residue of trauma. It's almost like a daily hygiene practice that we do. So purification in my experience, I started with a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of negativity, a lot of pain, a lot of conditioning, a lot of ideas and assumptions that in my early life and in my early years of spiritual practice would sometimes just overwhelm me so that, you know, I would feel incredibly sad for no reason or triggered by something. I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. And over the years of doing essentially mantra practice, I discovered that the oppressive qualities of these conditioned feelings was, much of it was dispelled, but even more than that, when they would come up, and I think this came up early in the class, Wendy was talking about it, that when those feelings come up, when we feel overwhelmed, that what purification is to substitute the positive qualities of Goddess, to bring them into our field, whether in the form of mantra, in the form of visualization, or in that very radical Kali-focused way of just going right into the negative feeling until we come out the other side. So that's what purification is. It's clearing the space so that that which is perfect and pure and beautiful, whether it's manifesting as light or as the deep, peaceful darkness, or as intensity, or as creativity, or as radical dissolution, where the purity of our inner being can come forth and radiate. So thank you for that question, and thank you so much for your practice. We're going to bring our evening to a close, or our morning in some cases, and do listen to this class again if you have a chance. The audio will be available by tomorrow morning, and you'll also be getting a homework assignment which will come to you in the morning. So thank you all so much, and thank you, Deb. And may we be happy, may we be blessed, may we be free, may we really, really take in the exquisite love of Goddess Mahalakshmi, who is us. Namaste. So much love. See you on the listserv.